Wake up, America. Time to stump the expert. And now, our master of ceremonies, Clifton Fadiman.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight, our wayward experts continue on their unpredictable path, the quartet consisting of John Kieran of the New York Sun and Franklin P. Adams, reinforced by the famous young conductor and composer, Leonard Bernstein, and the no less famous director and producer, Mr. Gregory Ratoff, director of the current Irish Eyes Are Smiling. We're going to begin with a question from Herbert Avedon of New York City. It's about drinks, gentlemen. What drink traditionally is accompanied by salt and lemon, or sometimes by salt and lime? What drink do you take with salt and lime, or sometimes lemon? Mr. Ratoff?
A Mexican drink called...
That's correct.
So Mexican far. Drink called Vic-Quac-Quac-Qua or something like this.
I don't know what you
get.
Tequila. Yeah.
Tequila.
Tequila. What did you say it was in the beginning? That sounded like a good drink. You just
you
made
see,
it up.
I don't speak Mexican, but I know. I saw Mexicans drink it.
That's right. Tequila is quite right.
Yeah.
Now, what drink is accompanied by herring and black bread? Mr. Ratoff.
Vodka.
Vodka. Now, Mr. Ratoff, that is, seems to be correct. In this country, we just drink vodka generally in cocktails or something of that sort. But I understand there's quite a ceremony in your native country,
yes,
Russia. How do they drink vodka?
I let you on a big secret.
Yes.
In Russia, they drink vodka with everything. As long as you can have a drink of vodka and eat something immediately, it's good.
It's good. And is there any particular reason why herring and black bread should be taken?
It's as good as anything. I've drunk it with anything.
I'm sure you have.
It makes you thirstier.
Yeah. It makes you thirstier, and it makes you want more vodka.
Well, I would say that the herring and the black bread is the most reasonable way of drinking.
It's the sanest way.
I mean, it's the cheapest way.
It's the cheapest.
Yeah.
Very good.
You can drink it with caviar, slightly at more expense, you know.
That clears everything up. And now, gentlemen, what drink would you accompany with crumpets? Crumpets, Mr. Bernstein.
Tea.
What are crumpets, Mr. Bernstein?
Well, I had one once. It's sort of between a biscuit and a scone. That's all I could figure out.
That seems reasonable enough.
Highly indigestible.
It is indigestible? Apparently you had more than one once, Mr. Adams. Well, that gives us 3 out of 3. Now try this one from Aaron Novak of New York. And get all on this. It's not too hard a question. Where will you find these phrases used? They all contain the word hold. The first is hold fast. Hold fast. Where do you find that phrase used? Mr. Adams?
I don't know. They used to have it on the 14th Street curve in the trolley line on Union Square.
They did?
The conductor used to holler that. The
conductor used to holler hold fast.
Hold fast.
Adams, you have me. You have me on the ropes. Mr. Ratoff?
I just had it used at the super chief, you know, from California on the turns.
They say
about 120 miles an hour.
Yes, I'd like to get it used perhaps more classically. Mr. Kieran?
I think there's a line of verse with that in. Hold fast the truth or something like that.
Well, you're near to it. You're near to it. In the Epistle to the Thessalonians, in St. Paul's Epistle to the Thessalonians, there is a phrase, very famous, prove all things, hold fast that which is good. Is that perhaps what
that's
you're thinking of, Mr. Kieran? Not perhaps quite good enough.
Wasn't close enough.
Yes. The word, Mr. Kieran, the word prove in that famous phrase means what? Prove all things.
That means test them.
Test them, yes.
Probo.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Now, here is another phrase which has the word hold in it. Hold enough. Mr. Adams.
I think
any more curbs and we're going
Hamlet.
To split. Hamlet. You've got the right author. Pick another play. Mr. Kieran.
And so-and-so be he who first cries hold enough.
Yes.
We'll keep this program clean.
They are mecked up, yes. That's what you meant, I think, Mr.
That's right.
Now,
I believe it occurs about a dozen times in various Gilbert and Sullivan shows.
Hold enough?
Hold.
Does it?
I never heard of it. The captain in Pinafore says, hold enough. Or is it just Porter's, though?
Is that sound right?
Pretty darn never mind, I insist upon.
You have to, you argue with Adams on Gilbert and Sullivan.
Where would I be going with these sons of the bride for my excellent crew, the Forsaken Company? Isn't that where, doesn't he say?
I don't know.
No, I don't know.
Maybe it just says hold.
I'm going to stick to Macbeth. I'm going to stick to Macbeth. Mr. Rattler?
Well, I wanted even to say that when you drink vodka, you can't say hold in offense.
Well, you're still back on that question. You move fast. Now, there's one more phrase, gentlemen, with the word hold in it. To have and to hold. Where will you find that, Mr. Adams?
You will find that in a title by Mary Johnson.
That's quite right, but she herself
and
got it from
I
what?
I think so. That is in Marriage Ceremony.
It is. Do you remember how it goes, Mr. Kieran?
To have and to hold, for better and for worse.
For better and for worse.
Till death do you part.
Yes,
for richer,
phrase.
For poorer.
That's right, from the Book of Common Prayer, the marriage rite. Well, we did get only 2 out of 3 on that. $57 in war bonds and stamps to Mr. Novak, and a set of the Britannica. Now, the next question comes from Eva Noble of Toronto. It's a musical question, gentlemen. Get 2 out of 3 if you can. You all know what the instrument, the celesta, is. Do you all know what the celesta is? If not, Mr. Bernstein will explain it in a few well-chosen words. What is a celesta?
Celesta is some kind of a bell?
No.
Well, it's an instrument that is operated by keys, much as a piano is, but instead of the hammers hitting strings, they hit little steel plates, which sound quite bell-like.
We're going to hear that sound very shortly, because the question is this. What composer or performer do you associate with each of these celesta passages? Let's have the first. What composer or performer? I have 3 hands. I have 3 musical experts tonight. I'm going to choose Mr. Kieran.
Tchaikovsky.
That's quite right.
That's from the Nutcracker Suite.
Very good. And what is the title of a little passage called?
One of those. Well, there's about 8 dances in it, and I never can keep them straight in my
Mr.
mind.
Mr. Bernstein?
I think it's the dance of the Mirlitone.
The Sugar Plum Fairy is the one.
Oh, God.
That's the Mirlitone.
Those are the two
fruit.
I can't distinguish.
Yes. Now, the second. Mr.
The other is.
We might have that some other time.
Yeah,
Mr.
Bernstein,
let's have the second one.
Sorry.
That's a little less easy, Mr. Bernstein.
Well, I don't think it was quite. Well, he left out an 8th rest at the beginning, but it's Rosenkavalier of Strauss.
And he left out an 8th rest.
Well, he should have gone 1 and then started.
Mr. Kahn, you should have gone 1. I see. That's quite right, Bernstein. And now the 3rd and last.
Does it have a name?
It has a name, but I want you to tell me what performer that's associated with. By the way, you said Richard Strauss for the Rosenkavalier.
Yes.
Yes. Now, how about this one?
Well, it's Boogie Woogie on the Celesta, but I didn't know that had a name.
Well, if
anybody
can
just sit and play Boogie Woogie on the Celesta.
Well, this is a particular Boogie Woogie piece, Mr. Mr. Rattle?
Is that Hazel Scott?
No, although she may conceivably play it. But it's associated with Mead Lux Lewis.
I never heard him play a celesta in my life. I heard him play many times.
Well, perhaps he played just this one celesta blues and played it very much as Mr. Kahn. He didn't leave out anything in that one, did he?
No.
No, he got everything in.
Very good, too.
We got 2 out of 3 on that. That's all we were required to get. Try this one from Frank Luby of Philadelphia. Get 2 out of 3. What's the American equivalent of each of these foreign words? The Russians call it kasha. What do we call it? The Russians call it kasha. Mr. Rathaus.
Barley?
No.
I think you might call it barley, Mr. Bernstein.
I don't think you can call it barley at all. I think it's buckwheat groats.
Buckwheat what?
Groats.
Buckwheat groats?
G-R-O-A-T-S.
That's I'll stick to barley.
And it's not barley. It's nothing.
Mr. Kieran, can you...
I know them very well.
A word kasha. I was raised on it.
Why, you said it was vodka.
Oh,
that makes kasha and vodka so far.
That's right. It's kasha. A very peculiar combination, but to have a drink of vodka and then eat kasha.
That's good, eh?
That's
right.
That's
I'll fight to the death on that. It's not barley
we
at all.
We can't afford to lose an expert. No fighting
to
the death.
Are you Russian? Oh, I was brought up. Not really, because if you're Russian, then I'll never fight. You know, argue with you anymore.
Will you folks come back to this program? May I declare you both right?
I am so grateful to you.
Mr. Kieran?
What is the only group I know, if that's supposed to be an English word, is a small coin.
No, groat is right. It's a kind of mush or mash.
Groat?
Groat, yeah.
It's a grain.
Grit.
In England? Yeah, it's known as John o' Groat in England. Yeah.
Groat in English is a small coin.
Not only do I have Mr. Ratoff and Mr. Bernstein disagreeing, but now you insist that groat's a small coin.
That's right.
You're breaking
You're
up.
You're finding Shakespeare.
Mr. Fadiman.
Yes,
Mr. This is the last remark about Kasha. You cannot drink vodka with a small coin.
Mr. Ratoff, I think you could, provided it was liquid currency. Well, buckwheat mush or millet or barley seem to be answers for that. Now, may we get on
not
to another
barley.
Language? Not barley.
No, sir.
You stubborn man. Try this one. The French call them cows in their own language. What do we call them?
How do you spell it?
Well, cows, C-O-W-S. In their own language, the French call them
cows. They call them vache?
That's right. Now, the French for cows is vache. When the French say vache, Mr. Ratoff, what do they...
Turkey.
Oh, no.
No.
What do you mean, no?
Vache aren't turkeys.
No, I'm talking about what the French calls cows is the turkey in English.
A French call cows a turkey in English?
Well, am I right or am I wrong? Give it
well,
to me
quick.
Well,
I don't know. It seems to me you've been having that vodka more recently. Mr. Kieran.
Well, they have a slang
That's
phrase
right.
in French. The la vache enragée. That means to...
mad cow.
That's right. To be very angry, to be bitter about something. To manger la vache enragée.
Of course, they have another slang phrase, a vache espagnole.
Oh, right? That's only... parle français comme vache espagnole.
The last Thanksgiving I ate with the French people, and they called the turkey cows.
You back to me, back to your turkey. Well, I have it...
How's his milk?
I have it that vache is a slang term in French similar to our cops or policemen.
Oh.
Is that wrong?
Well,
Kieran?
They have a lot of slang terms. Fleek.
Fleek
is a sound name for the cops.
That would be out. Well, we have turkey, cops. What else do we have, Mr. Kieran, on vache?
Cops and robbers.
Cops and robbers. All right. Now, here's a third and last one. Let's see if we can get this clear. The English call it a vest. What do we call it? The English call it a vest. Mr. Adams? Mr. Kieran?
Mm-hmm. I can think of the...
A sweater?
No, I don't
We call it an undershirt.
An undershirt.
That's
yes.
right. That's right.
An undershirt. That's right. What do you call it, Mr. Radoff?
West, I called West.
That's
where you... This is what I don't wear. I don't wear West.
So we did get two out of three.
He just came from the West.
On that one. Carrying it with him.
The experts are entitled to a little rest after their labors over the first four questions. So here's our two piano team with Morton Gould's Pavane. Thank you.
And now, gentlemen, back to our program with this question for Mrs. D.B. Hotelling of Hollis, New York, and get 2 out of 3. Identify the characters of fiction, of literature, from these incidents attending their birth. Now, this character was born holding his brother's heel. Who was that? Born holding onto his brother's heel. It's in, does that come back to any of you? Mr. Bernstein?
Very familiar.
Not entirely, apparently. Mr.
Might have been Achilles' brother.
No,
it wasn't. You got the wrong heel.
Castor and Pollux? No.
No, it's in the Bible, Mr. Bernstein. Jacob was born holding the heel of Esau, his brother Esau. It's a description of Jacob's birth in Genesis. Mr. Adams, recall that now. All right. Now, this character was born crying, drink, drink, drink. Up your alley, Ratto.
Well, of course, I remember I was on a Schubert show called Student Prince. There was a chorus saying, drink, drink, drink. But
yes, they were not just born.
They were not just born.
No, of course, they're generally older than that. Mr. Kieran.
Well, I'll make a wild guess. I haven't finished the idea, but if nobody wants it, I'll try Gargantua.
Oh, that's not a wild guess. That's correct, Mr. Kieran. Gargantua, yes, and you'll find that story, Mr. Kieran, where?
Gargantua and Pantagruel.
Yes, by Rabelais. How about a character who was born far away from his mother? Famous, legendary character born far away from... That doesn't seem possible, does it?
Have we lost anyway?
No. We have one wrong. We have to get this right.
Tristram Shandy.
Tristram Shandy. Now, why that?
I don't know. It's the only birth I remember in the first chapter.
Oh, that birth goes through about 250 pages, Mr. Adams. One of the longest births in literature. Well, it's a tricky... Perhaps I phrased it trickily. Remember the ugly duckling? Who's really a swan hatched by a duck? Also, in the last part of Back to Methuselah, the men and women are born from eggs at the age of 17 or something like that. Well, we got 2 wrong on that.
$57 and war bonds to Mrs. Hotelling, together with an Encyclopedia Britannica. And now, gentlemen, try this one from Mrs. Mary Taylor Hallam of Dallas, Texas. Identify the movie in which the following purchase is made. A sailor buys a warehouse for a girl. Sailor buys a warehouse for a girl. In what movie does that occur, Mr. Kieran?
I think that occurs in Jimmy Durante picture, Three Girls and a Sailor, or Three Sailors and a Girl, or something like that.
Well, is all the difference in the world?
Well, not to me.
I know, but to the sailor.
Isn't that the picture?
That's right.
You've got Jimmy Durante. He's the chief fellow for me, isn't it?
You've got one too many girls, I think.
Well, 2 girls and a sailor.
2 girls and a sailor, yes.
Well, any good sailor could take 3.
That's quite right. Here, the character buys the warehouse and turns into a nightclub where the sisters entertain servicemen. That's part of the plot. Now, there's another movie in which a civilian buys beer for 6 Marines. Mr. Kieran's been going to the movies lately.
That is Eddie Bracken.
That's right.
Hail a Conquering Hero on a Swell Show.
And a very good Preston Sturges picture it is. Yes, that's right. Begins with that.
That's
very
right.
Comical.
He's wonderful.
Interesting thing. He's very good indeed. Now, in another movie, a farmer buys his wife her first book. In what movie does that scene occur? A farmer buys his wife her first book, the first one she's ever received, presumably read. Well, we have 2 out of 3. The answer is in Dragon's Seed. Catherine Hepburn, who takes the part of the Chinese girl Jade, is given a book by her husband, Lao Er, as his Chinese name is. So that gives us 2 out of 3. Now try this one from Fred Lawrenson of Toronto, and get all. Quote a line mentioning each of these days. First, Summer's Day.
Summer's
Day, yes. Mr. Retta?
Summer's Day, is that summertime, a song by Gershwin?
Just Summer's Day. It's got to be exactly right. Mr. Adams?
Maud Muller, on a summer's day, rake the meadows, sweep the hills.
That's beautiful, and perfectly right. Mr. Kieran, did you have another one?
Yes, I have the... Well, I think Mr. Bernstein has the same one.
You can
18th sonnet of Shakespeare.
The 18th sonnet, what's the line?
Shall I compare thee to a summer's day? Yes. Thou art more lovely and more temperate, etc.
Very beautiful sonnet. That gives us 2 summer's days, more than enough. Now, how about
the phrase seventh day. Where would you find that, Mr. Bernstein?
On the seventh day he rested.
Yes.
Genesis.
Yeah, from Genesis in the Bible. Quite right. And finally, ancient day. Ancient day. That spark, that strikes no spark? Mr. Curran, that strikes no
ancient
spark?
Ancient day?
Ancient day.
Yes. Ancient?
Ancient. Just one ancient day. Not ancient of days, which is a hymn, but ancient day. Mr. Curran, I've always known that you were modest, but I think your modesty now is almost overweening. The phrase comes from the works of John Kieran.
One of those sports poems
it
I wrote.
It is a sports poem. Should I read it to you?
By the Neolithic Dempsey?
No, you got the wrong fighter. You know, you have a very bad memory, Kieran. I don't know what you're doing on it.
Well, I wrote an awful lot of them. They weren't very good.
Well, they were good enough to win $57 for Mr. Lawrenson. Here's the line. Here's the line for Mr. Kieran. Want to hear it, Mr. Adams?
I certainly do. I like to hear his stuff anyway.
All right, here we go. Just a few lines for Mr. John Kieran. They warned me of an ancient day. I wouldn't know. I wasn't there. When odds ran wild the other way, and yet the tortoise beat the hare. So Schmeling, may to my surprise, dealt out Joe Lewis with a blow. I thank them for their warning wise. I still like Joe. Only now it comes back to you, Mr.
Yes, Anderson. Yeah.
Almost
what do you mean? That's good.
Sure, it's good. $57 to Mr. Lawrence and all the same, and a set of the Britannica. And we go on now to a question, a musical question, for Mrs. Catherine M. Lupien of Milford, Delaware. What place is being described in each of these operatic excerpts as a place that being described in the course of the music? Get two out of three, and let's have the first. Apparently, that's a pretty tough one.
Very pretty.
It's pretty, but not clear.
Not clear, but very pretty.
Yes, very pretty. Mr. Bernstein, does it sound familiar to you?
Completely unknown.
Oh, it relieves me. It relieves me.
He doesn't know it, then.
Then it's hardly
okay.
Worthwhile mentioning.
No.
Well, it's the beginning of Smetana's The Bartered Bride. And in the music, a...
Never saw it or heard it.
Never heard it?
I saw the score, and I don't know a thing but some dances in the overture.
Well, you're young, and you probably will hear it before you're through with your career, Mr. Bernstein. A Czech village in The Bartered Bride is being described in the course of the music. Now we have to get the next two right. Let's have the next one, Mr. Kahn. I have Mr. Bernstein's hand.
Stop me if this is wrong, Mr. Radoff, but Chovanschina by Mussorgsky.
Unfortunately, the man is right.
I'd like to sing you the next phrase where he stopped to show you that I know this phrase.
I'm sure you do, but I meant the pronunciation.
Avanshina is right, and the next phrase is ta ra 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 ri ta 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 ta. It's called The Daybreak Break from the Avanshina by Mussorgsky. You're like,
Good for you. Radoff, are you clear with Petrillo?
With Petrillo? He's clear with me.
Well, that's perfectly right. And what's being described, Mr. Bernstein, in the
Well, this is
prelude.
The prelude to yes. Avanshina, actually.
Yes, that's right.
The daybreak in Moscow.
Yes, what part of Moscow?
On the river Moscow.
You agree, that's where Moscow is, but...
No, the name of the river is Moscow. Moscow
yes.
City...
Yeah.
Is laying on a river called Moscow.
Nothing could be cuter. What I'm trying to get you folks to say is that the famous Red Square of Moscow is being described in the music. But you're close enough. And now the third and last, Mr. Kahn.
Oh,
tough. Kind of hard, apparently. It is hard. It's the overture from Gershwin's Porgy and Bess and Catfish Row, the scene of the opera is being described.
Charles Messie.
That is a tough one. There again.
Unfortunate selection from Porgy and Bess.
Well, it was unfortunate for us. $57 to Mrs. Lupien and a set of the Britannica. Try this one, gentlemen, from George A. Ballum of Phoenix. From what language do we derive the following words, and what was the original meaning? Babushka. What language? Mr. Retov.
Babushka is from the Russian language, means grandmother.
Yes, little grandmother.
Yeah.
And now, what language do we derive the word parole, and what was the original meaning? Mr. Kieran?
We got it from the French.
What does the word mean in French?
Word.
It means
word. Honor. A word of honor, practically.
Yes. When someone's out on parole,
that's right.
He's given his word of honor to return. We get, of course, a series of English words like parliament and so forth, all from the same stem. And finally, the word politician is derived from what language? And what was it originally in its meaning? Politician. Mr. Kieran, can you take
well,
a turn?
Well, it's derived from the Latin, I think.
Derived from the Greek.
Well, we got it through the
citizen.
Latin.
Citizen. Well, not quite, Mr. Adams. You're on the right track. It's from the Greek what? The Greek polis, P-O-L-I-S, meaning city. We get
metropolis. Citizen of a city.
Yes. That politician is one engaged in the affairs of the city, which was then the state. Well, we got 2 out of 3 on that, and that's all we'll have time for. Thank you, Mr. Ratoff, and thank you, Mr. Bernstein, for coming to the party this evening.
This is the Armed Forces Radio Service.